Many first-year college students step foot on campus without the knowledge of where to access resources and support in times of need, not only in their first year, but throughout their college experience. That's where many first-year experience programs across the country try to fill a gap, from providing freshmen with information on sexual assault to the dangers of binge drinking to just navigating how to declare and figure out a major. We're talking about how colleges try to lay the groundwork on the first year here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We reached out to Karen McClear. She is program coordinator for UW-Platteville's First Year Experience. The program works on making sure new students launch their college careers successfully. Karen, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Kate. I'm happy to be here.
Well, step back, if you will, and explain for us, what is the point of a first-year experience? What is this class like?
So the first-year experience, which includes a class but can also include some other activities such as workshops and orientations, the idea, as you said in your introduction, is to serve the student, fill in those gaps of knowledge that they may not have coming into the university. And this is developed out of research. First-year experience is not a new concept, grounded in the scholarship of teaching and learning, where folks have spent a great deal of time thinking about what's the best way that adolescents learn, how can we apply that in and out of the classroom, and then a lot about the psychology of how we also react to very important change and transitions in our lives. And so we want to make sure then that we address these issues that students might be experiencing so that they can be as successful as possible as they start school.
So Karen, how big are the gaps that you're closing, and where are these gaps?
So if you look at the population, and I'll break it down into some smaller groups, if you have students whose brothers and sisters and parents and grandparents were college students, they probably experience smaller, what we call knowledge gaps. And so when they set foot on a college campus, they will realize, oh, there are offices where I need to go to sign up for classes. There's an office where I need to go to take care of my financial needs. They may have a basic vocabulary about that. But those students may still be living away from home for the very first time, and so they'll still be experiencing potentially those social changes, those social anxieties, and they may still be wondering, you know, is college right for me, even though there's a pattern established in their family. Go to the other end of the spectrum, and you have a student who may be the first in their family to ever set foot on a college classroom.
Those are first-generation students, as they're called.
Yes, first-generation students. And so there's not that familiarity. We talk a lot about how much of the experience is completely foreign, both in terminology that you need to use. What does it mean to take a placement test? What does it mean to have a hold on your registration? All of these things that are very in tune to university employees but would be very foreign to people who've never set foot. And so we want to help them navigate so that we aren't inadvertently as a university creating an obstacle just because a student is unfamiliar with a process.
And colleges are working really hard to create that pipeline for first-generation students and finding those students who have that potential to really excel on their own college campuses. So it seems then that the first-year experience would be even more of a vital part of getting that new college student up to speed.
Absolutely. And you mentioned also it's not just up to speed, but it's carrying them through that whole first year and sometimes beyond into that second year. I mentioned earlier this idea of sense of belonging, and students in college can hit roadblocks in different ways. Some students might walk onto a college campus and they might look around in those first weeks and they might have the impression that there's no one else on the campus like them. Maybe it's because of their socioeconomic background. Maybe it's because of their belief about their academic preparedness. And that can really zap their confidence. That can put them in a position where they might suddenly feel, maybe I don't belong here, maybe I can't do this. And so having resources available to them so that they can, first of all, express how they're feeling, receive the reassurance that that's a temporary feeling that they might be having, and that we believe in them and that they do have the abilities to be successful in college, and then making sure that they have any other support and help that they need. We can push them over that sort of temporary hump and then watch them flourish.
What do students do that helps them explore their identity and figure out the next year of life on campus?
We want to make sure that the students have opportunities to connect with key offices or key staff members on campus to help them with that self-exploration. So some of that may happen in that first year experience course, if that's a part of their college experience. Our class that we have at Platteville talks about coming up with goals and defining a pathway and exploring their major. There may be a career and professional development office on campus where they can work with a professional staff member on those types of questions. Sometimes those explorations happen more organically. We encourage our students in their first semester to develop their own personal support network. We call it Find Your Five. Can they find five individuals or offices who they trust and they feel comfortable going to or talking with when they have questions like this? And that might be a professor in one of their classes. It might be an academic coach. It might be their supervisor at their student work job. But these are all people who live in, who work at the university and who can then support them with the kinds of questions they may have about where do I want to go next and how do I want to move from being a college student to someone who's exploring a career.
We're talking with Karen McLear. She is a program coordinator for UW-Platteville's first year experience. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Are you a college student closing in on the end of your freshman year? How have these couple semesters changed you? Is your future more certain, or are you more confused? And what do you wish you'd known a year ago? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Karen, some of the things you're saying here remind me that these students, they need to know that someone is there looking out for their well-being and that they're not just a number in a very large intro survey class being taught by perhaps a grad student, that they have a place where they are, that they're almost like it's placemaking.
I think placemaking is a wonderful way to describe it, and one of the advantages that we see of a first-year experience course is you have the opportunity to create an environment in which you have a small class size. At Platteville, we try to hold it at 22. Where that student can begin to build a sense of community, meet other students who are experiencing similar things to what they're experiencing, develop a supportive relationship with that instructor as they begin to navigate that first semester. But you're correct in that we want to make sure that the students are aware that the university has their best interest in mind, and so if they have a question, if they're feeling stuck, or if they're just having a terrific day, we want to know that they can tell someone about that, and that increases then their sense of belonging and feeling that the university is their community and is their home away from home.
Does the cost of college make it more important that students are able to tackle this whole new world, this new campus, effectively? Because a lot is at stake here.
There is a lot at stake. We're very aware in higher education that tuition is more expensive than it was 5, 10, 15 years ago. So the student is making an investment. They're making an investment in their own future. They're making an investment in themselves. And so if there's anything that we can do to smooth around some of those rough edges, to get a resource in place in a timely fashion so that they might, maybe not avoid every bump in the road, but one of them might be a little smaller, pick themselves up a little bit more quickly, then they're able to continue to focus on the goal, which is graduation and a degree. And so if we can do that without slowing them down, without causing them additional stress, we want to make sure that we're there for them.
First-generation college students make up about 32% of the U.S. college population, and many universities are trying to develop programs to properly support those students who come to college with different needs than those who may have a history of college-going family members. It's one of the threads of this conversation about the first-year college experience here on The Morning Show. Karen McClear stays with us. She's a program coordinator for UW-Platteville's first-year experience. And you can join in with your questions, your stories, 800-642-1234. Is your child a first-year college student? How did you help your kids prepare for higher education and living more on their own? What worried you about their journey, and do you feel differently now? 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll be back after a news update here on the Ideas Network. For college students across the country, academic success is only one part of the equation. College students may be living away from home for the first time. They're also learning how to manage stress, respond to a wide variety of situations, and then prepare themselves for eventual entry into the work world. It's all a heavy lift. We're talking about the first year experience and how college administrators are trying to make smoother transitions. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A new program piloted at UW-Madison, Penn State, and University of Virginia is called The Art and Science of Human Flourishing. Came across that yesterday, a class that combines neuroscience and psychology to help students think more deeply about their choices and well-being. It will be offered again to first-year students this fall at all three schools. Karen McClear stays with us for this conversation. She's a program coordinator for UW-Platteville's first-year experience. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Did your college have an orientation program for new students? What did you expect to learn? Is that what the experience taught you? Perhaps you struggled going to college. How did you think your experience would have been different with a program to support you? 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Mike now, joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Mike. What was your story?
It's my son's story. He didn't do that well in high school, but the teachers at the Milwaukee Public School High School saw his talent, and they wrote letters to Platteville. They accepted him. He had ADHD, and he was on probation the first semester, but Platteville really worked with him, and he soon thereafter was on the dean's list. He got a really good job right out of college because of the meaningful internships that they have there, and he developed skills that were made him more valuable. In addition to the mechanical engineering degree, and he just got a job with Tesla in Nevada now, and so I really thank Platteville for this isn't PR work here. They really do work with the students when they come in.
Mike, thanks for your story. Karen, that hits close to home.
It absolutely does, and congratulations to Mike and his son. I know that his son probably worked very, very hard to get that degree. Mechanical engineering is a challenging field, but we're very happy for him. I appreciate the honest testimonial because I think it speaks to what we've been discussing this whole segment, that students have tremendous potential. And if we as universities can be in the right place at the right time for them, respond to whatever their questions are, their needs are, their concerns are, and build that scaffold, for lack of a better metaphor, to help them ascend. It's a wonderful thing to see the students flourish when that happens.
Mike, thanks for the call. Karen, how do parents factor into this first-year experience? And I do want to bring up the word helicopter parents, because that has certainly factored in recent decades to the whole college experience and what administrators are up against.
I think that phrase has come up several times. And what I have seen actually recently, and this is within the last couple, 3 years, is a real shift in higher education research about the role of parents. We look to see how parents can be key supporters of their students. Parents right now of incoming college students have a very tight-knit relationship with them. They're just as invested in their students' success. And we're looking at different opportunities to make sure that the parent can function as an ally as we help their student move forward. And so our first-year experience program, we have a regular outgoing communication that we send to parents. It's an e-newsletter. And we want to make sure that they recognize that they can be a voice in the conversation. So if their student is struggling, if their student has a question, if their student doesn't know where to go, the parent feels empowered because of the information that we share with them to be able to say, well, have you checked out academic support programs? Do you think you might like to meet with an academic coach? That's a very important recommendation coming from someone off campus, but still accomplishes the same goal, which is providing support for that student.
And a person who is generally an authority in their life, or someone who has been in the past, at least.
Absolutely. I think that authority is very important.
Well, Alex emailed us and says that they didn't know what they wanted to do after high school. Alex felt pressure to go to school, wound up dropping out of community college. Now Alex is enrolled at Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College in Ashland for the marine program. And Alex says they love it. They wish they'd been able to work and think about the future after high school instead of wasting money. So there's that transition, if you will, between high school and college, where lots of decisions have to be made early on. And how should parents and students broach that time?
I think that's a very common experience that Alex is describing, where a student may be coming out of high school and feels somehow that they need to have their entire life planned out and mm-hmm. figured out. And the reality is that there's space for young people to think and plan and perhaps make changes in direction. One of the things that we try to emphasize with students who choose to start right out in college after high school is to leave room for some exploration for what their major might be in college. Students might walk onto campus very convinced that they want to major, let's say, in accounting. And then through the course of taking classes maybe in different areas might change their mind in a couple of semesters and suddenly they're in biology and it's something that really feeds them. So that's a message that we want to make sure that students and also their families understand, that this is a time for them to really think about what their options are. And, you know, as Alex talked about, sometimes for students it's important to step back and say, maybe I want to take what's commonly referred to as a gap year and maybe work or maybe think about it and then step into college when they're really ready to move towards something they're passionate about.
And even if they do go right from high school to college, mom or dad has to also be in the right place in their mind once that major is declared, because the student may be well aware that they may not be following the path that had been talked about around the dinner table or that their parent had followed.
That's absolutely true. There's a tremendous kind of push-pull relationship that happens when a student steps out of the high school environment and steps into that college environment. And what we encourage, you know, students to do is to gain information. Right. So if there's a major that they're really passionate about, gain information, be able to learn from maybe faculty in that area or research that they're doing with potential employers or careers, so that they can very carefully explain the choice that they have. We trust that parents are wanting what's best for their student, but sometimes the conversation has to take a little bit longer.
You know, Karen, I just feel like we're a world away, at least I am, from how it was when I was in college. on a dorm floor where there was one telephone. There were no cell phones yet. I had to stand by the phone to make sure that I was there at 8 a.m. on Saturday morning when my mom would call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just so much change in how kids today are using their phones and social media and the interconnectedness of it all. Are colleges feeling like they have stayed up with the times and what these students are doing and feeling and accessing on their own in college environments?
I think it's a consistent topic of conversation at universities about not only maintaining that awareness of the very complex world in which these students are growing up and then now trying to sort of step into an environment of learning, but also how to make sure that we are engaging and communicating with them, you know, in the best way possible. A really practical example, so in higher education, we often communicate with students and other colleagues through email. And a few years ago, that was a one-sentence statement on a syllabus, check your email. We've discovered since then that there needs to be a lot more messaging and even sometimes a lot more coaching for students as to the importance of that type of communication because they're accustomed to communicating with their peers in different ways. But we want to make sure that we're in tune to that. And then the other piece of the cell phone is that sometimes that divides their attention. They may be very strongly connected to home or family or someone who might be drawing their attention or their energy who isn't even on the campus. And so that can create additional stress. So we have found, for example, and it's not just isolated to Wisconsin, it's national, that there are a greater number of students who are struggling with stress, struggling with some type of perhaps mental health concern because of environmental factors. And so we need to make sure that we connect them with the resources we have available on campus.
As we wrap up here, finals are staring us down. What do you want to tell those young adults out there as they inch closer to finishing their first year?
I think the first thing that I always like to tell them is congratulations. When I taught the first experience course at the end of the semester, I would always ask my students, so do you feel like a college student? And some of them said yes, and some of them said no. I think the transition takes a while, but, you know, they've made it. They're a college student. They're involved in this wonderful experience, and look how much they've grown. I think it's a really great opportunity for them to reflect back on where they were then and where they are now, because now they can begin that forward thinking that the caller talked about in terms of what am I going to do to continue building skills so that when I graduate, I'm in a job that I love.
Well, Karen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. This has been very enjoyable.
Karen McAleer is program coordinator for UW-Platteville's first year experience, and the program aims to ensure new students launch their college careers successfully. One of the most visible student activists who emerged after the Parkland, Florida high school shooting is taking a gap year to devote time to political causes. 17-year-old David Hogg has been accepted at UC Irvine, but his mother told CNN yesterday that he'll not be going off to college this year because he's decided to take a year off and work on the midterm elections. We're shifting our conversation to look at the gap year and its worth here on The Morning Show. Closer to home, Sarah Candy from Kenosha decided not to go to college right after high school, opted for a gap year. She's in California right now after spending more than 7 months in Senegal. Sarah, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So you were on Wisconsin Public Radio last summer as you prepared to leave for Senegal. Were these months in Africa what you expected when you boarded that plane?
Oh, absolutely not. I don't know what my expectations were. I think they did meet a lot of stereotypes of the country and the idea that people have of Africa. And I wasn't quite sure what I would take out of it, but these past 7 months have been completely different than they were back in August. You know, they've challenged me, and I've completely grown as a person in a lot of ways because of this year.
So what did you do there in Senegal?
Every day was its own adventure. But since I lived there, I got into a bit of routine. I had two apprenticeships. One was working at an artisanal village, learning how to tailor, a more laborious one. And the other one was working at a high school, teaching English to second-level students. And with that, I also taught the extracurricular club with English, where we focused a lot more on creative use of the language as well.
Tell us about your host family, where you lived.
I lived in the city of Tiwawan. It has about 55,000 people, and it is the second most religious town in Senegal, just after Touba. So when I first came to Global Citizen Year in country, they asked us questions of the type of family we want, and they took into consideration the size and the type of environment you want to be in. And so I said I wanted to be a bit in a city and in a smaller family. So my immediate family was two host sisters my age, and they're twins, and a younger 13-year-old brother, as well as a mother and a father there. And then I had some older siblings who worked and lived in the capital, and one in France as well, and there were seven of those.
So a gap year can look many different ways, but you went overseas with this nonprofit called Global Citizen Year, which really capitalizes, if you will, on high school students taking a gap year before college. Why did you choose to go this path, and what was that like working through Global Citizen Year?
Well, just about a year ago, I was looking at the college options I had in front of me. And as I saw them, and I had plenty, I didn't like any of them. I didn't feel prepared to go into this environment. And so I actually stumbled upon Global Citizen Year through an article they had published on the media. And I remember looking at it and thinking, this is interesting, because prior to that article and really learning about it, I had thought gap years are for people who don't know what they want to do. And I looked and I thought to myself, I don't really know what I want to do. And this program, like you mentioned, emphasizes on learning abroad. And in high school, I thought so much about how important it is to learn outside of classroom walls. So when I did some more research into this program, I saw its incredible immersive experience. It lays so much emphasis on the host families and the language and working and becoming one in the country rather than going and just kind of doing your own thing, maybe not immersing, not really getting to know the culture. And so the working with Global Citizen Year was incredible. They offer a great amount of support to the fellows, but it's still very, very independent. So the first 2 months or a month in country, we have small catch and release systems where we're put out into our communities, we're put out into our apprenticeships, and they come back and we talk about it. And as a group, we have large discussions on anything and everything, anything that challenges us. And by the end, when we have our next three training seminars, we're talking about broader topics like neocolonialism in Senegal or, you know, gender roles. So it's a big step, and Global Citizen Year really supports us throughout it.
Sarah Candy of Kenosha is with us. She took a gap year through the Oakland, California-based nonprofit called Global Citizen Year. She's in California now after spending more than 7 months in Senegal. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Did you take a gap year between high school and college? Where did you go? What did you do? Let's talk about it after a news update. Gap years, as they're called, are a popular option for students who want different experiences between high school and college. The concept attracted a lot of attention when Malia Obama took a gap year before enrolling at Harvard. We're talking about the ways students are preparing for college and ensuring a successful first-year experience. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Sarah Candy stays with us. She hails from Kenosha, decided not to go to college right after high school, opting instead to take a gap year through the Global Citizen Year Fellows Program. She spent more than 7 months in Senegal. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Perhaps you wanted to take a gap year, but you couldn't. How do you think that experience would have changed your time in school or at work as a young adult? What do you think is the right purpose for a gap year? Should everyone use that time to prepare for college? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Sarah, it seems that gap years get a bit of flack, if you will. There's some baggage with the gap year because perhaps adults, parents think the student may end up slacking off, that they won't do anything productive in that year, or perhaps parents are worried that the student may not ultimately go to college. Did you have those types of conversations with your parents?
I absolutely did. My family is very big on traveling, but we are also very college-oriented. So I remember when I brought the idea to my dad, he thought I was crazy. He supported me, but he wasn't so sure about it, and he had big thoughts on, if I start traveling, will I ever go back? But I think gap years are important in the sense that if you're doing one and you are really learning, it is not time off, you know. It's not a gap year off. It's a gap year on. And it's very intense. And I think a lot of my learning was so much more intense, seeing that I was living it versus reading it in a book instead. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And you were also surrounded by other people taking a gap year. So perhaps you didn't feel so on your own in this adventure?
Right. They were, like I said earlier, an incredibly diverse group, and we all had very unique experiences that we built upon with each other. And I actually lived alone in my city. I was very close to some other fellows, but that made for an even more unique experience where if I wanted to share or just be surrounded by other people, I would spend a lot more time with the locals. But yes, when we came together, it was everyone's different thoughts. And something interesting is, since we had so much freedom, we could pursue what we were interested in. And so I got to learn so many more different topics about everyone's favorite thing, you know? And we all discovered certain things we didn't know we had cared so much about. Like I said, I taught at a high school, and I never really thought teaching was something I was interested in. And maybe it's not something I want to pursue, but I did lots of research with Global Citizen Year about the school system and strikes and how it works and the influence of the French in the schools. And I had no idea I would be so interested in that. So we all built upon each other's experiences.
Before you left, you wrote about fear of the unknown. How has this time, a world away, refined fear for you?
The fear that I felt was, I didn't know how to explain it. It was something, I knew nothing about the country. I, in fact, didn't even know where it was on a map. And it was a fear of not knowing anything. I have taken a lot of pride in my life in being able to add to conversation. And being in Senegal, I could not do so for a very long time. One, because I couldn't understand the language I was speaking in, and two, because I knew nothing about the culture. All I could do was share my version of my own culture.
Do you think a gap year is for everyone, or who would specifically benefit from a gap year?
I think everyone really would benefit from a gap year. I know there are some stigmas around it that, you know, it's hard or people can't do it or it's scary, which is all true. But I have personally witnessed myself and others in my cohort grow so much. And I think that if people took the gap year that suited them, it doesn't mean they have to go to Senegal. It means that maybe if they want to travel abroad, they could go elsewhere, you know? And our program also offers other countries, and they have similarities and differences. But as long as you're being challenged and taken out of your comfort zone in some way. That is the real importance of a gap year, getting these new experiences that you have never had before and really immersing in them for a longer period of time so you understand and you witness it firsthand.
Sarah, do you think high school students today are going to college too soon, too young?
I think that that's the only thing they know. They go to college just, and I was the same way. They go to college because that's what they should do. They don't know anything else. Their siblings went to university. Teachers in high school preach that senior year, and then you go straight to university. And yeah, I think maybe they are too young. They don't know enough of the world, and I'm sure no one has ever really experienced these other places, any other places long term before. So I don't think students are prepared. I know that if I hadn't taken this gap year, I wouldn't be going into college as prepared as I am now. This year has opened up so many new questions for me. And like I said, I always took pride in knowing things, but I now love not knowing. I love the conversations that it sparks, and I love asking. And before, I was sometimes afraid to ask. And so if I hadn't done this, I don't know if I would know if I would be happy where I was in college. You know, this year has truthfully confused me because it gave me a plethora of new things that I was interested in. You know, my original intent for university was to study computer science, and maybe that'll stay the same, but maybe it'll change. I want to do something international, and now I have all this interest in, you know, gender studies and ethnic and cultural studies and how to make a real lasting impact. And that's something I never would have known if I had gone straight to university.
And it sounds like, Sarah, you also now have a story to tell. You have more to bring to conversations, and having a story perhaps gives you more confidence.
Absolutely. It does give you a lot more confidence. And I think something that the university system is searching for is diversity. And I am Caucasian, and, you know, I am from a middle-class family, and I now have this diversity, you know, within me. I have this diversity of this experience. And I was recently talking with my dad and some other fellows about we experienced being a minority there. You know, and it's something I had never felt before, something you could never feel unless it actually is something that you experience. And maybe now that I'm back in the States, I cannot call myself that anymore, but I have these thoughts that I can share with others, things I could relate to with others that I could never, ever do before.
Did your dad come around to a gap year?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It was around June, where we made the official decision that I would attend with Senegal with Global Citizen Year instead of college. And we had a deal that I had to pay for the tuition myself. Otherwise, I would still go to college. And as I filled out forms for Global Citizen Year over the summer and I still did all my doctor's appointments, he started getting pretty interested in it. And then once I was gone and he saw me both struggle and be really happy and learn so much and come, and when I got to talk to him on the phone, just ask him these really intense questions and, you know, challenge political things that were happening in the States with things that I was observing in Senegal, I think, yeah, he definitely supports it. And I'll see him soon, and I can't wait to really show him how I have grown and see for myself once I'm home, because I think it'll be most evident once I return home.
Well, let's do the big reveal. What's next for you?
I will be attending the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and that's also thanks to the help of Global Citizen Year. They supported me with a college counselor who really, really went out of her way to make sure that I got into my dream school.
And I understand you reapplied to UW-Madison while in Senegal?
I did. I actually was rejected from Madison last year. I was waitlisted and I appealed, and I did not get in. But this year, if you think about it, the only new thing on my transcript was Global Citizen Year. I did not have a new set of classes with A's, straight A's. It was only this outstanding program and the support that it gave me. And yes, now I will be going there.
Do you feel like you have the same trepidations about college and finding your way at a very large state school?
Well, in accordance with your last guest speaker on this show, I have resources. Actually, my final community project in Senegal was creating a book from Wolof to English because my students asked for resources to study English at home. And Wisconsin, the University of Wisconsin, actually has an outstanding Wolof program, turns out. And so I got to reach out to them, and I already have this odd connection with Senegal at the University of Wisconsin. And so I know where I can reach out for various needs, and I love the school. I've loved it forever, and I'm very excited to begin my higher education there.
Oh, so you've already found your one of five, as Karen said earlier.
Yep, I have.
Well, this has been so fantastic to talk with you. Sarah, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thank you for having me.
Sarah Candy is from Kenosha. She took a gap year, living and working more than 7 months in Senegal. Earlier, we talked with Karen McClear. She's the program coordinator for UW-Platteville's first-year experience, about setting college students up for success. This hour of the morning show was produced by Keely Baltina. Michael Derringer provided technical direction. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer Kent, and this conversation comes to you on the Ideas Network.